This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, February the 1st, 2013. Hello and a warm welcome to the Winchester and District newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending February the 1st, 2013, which this week have been edited by Jean and Vernon Gardner and Irene Dowding. Today, Keith Vincent should be reading this issue for you, but he and one or two of his team are away on their holidays, so we're delighted to have some deputies for you. My name is Ros Lydiard and I'm your presenter for today. Ellen Gray reading in for Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Matt Avery reading for Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Albie Minns, a new reader who's joined us to read regularly on this team.
Hello.
And on to this week's announcements, starting with What's On. There's a large musical programme, if you're interested, this week. On Friday, February the 8th, the Mozart Requiem is at Winchester Cathedral at 7:30. It's the Hanover Band with Elizabeth Weisberg, soprano, Diana Moore, alto, and Sam Furness, tenor. It's conducted by Benjamin Bale. You can get tickets for this from the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. I'll say that number again, 01962 857 275. There is a talk at the United Church in Jury Street in Winchester on Wednesday the 6th of February. It's headed "Is Jesus the Answer? Living in the Story." It's a talk by Jane Williams, who is an author and lecturer at St. Mellitus College, St. Paul's Theological Centre, and she is the wife of Rowan Williams. And it is facilitated by Debbie Thrower. Another concert on Another concert on Friday, February the 8th. The music concert is Populaire, and that's at St. Luke's Church, Mildmay Street, Stanmore. It's performed by the music department of Winchester University, and it is music to suit all tastes, in aid of Naomi House and the St. Luke's Floor Fund. Ticket admission is £6, and you can get tickets from this number coming up, 01962 863373. That's 01962 863373. And then another talk, this is Singing for Wellbeing. On Monday, February the 4th, Singing for Wellbeing at United Church, Jury Street. And everybody is invited, particularly those with some memory loss. And you sing together in the social environment, and there's a suggested donation here of £4. It includes refreshments, and you can find out more from 01962 714 485. That number again, 01962 714 485. And those are our What's On announcements for you this week. Now we're going to move on to lighting up time. On Friday the 1st of February, the sun came up at 7:44 a.m. and will set at 4:55 p.m. On Wednesday the 6th of February, lighting up time will end at 7:35 a.m. and begins at 5:06 p.m. And as usual, I'd just like to remind you to contact Lynn Parker if you have any problems with your recording. Her number is 01962 862 826. That's 862 826. And do remember, if you'd rather not listen to any particular item on the recording, you can skip forward to the next track by pressing the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player. Now we're going to move on to the main headlines for this week. The first headline is "Review of Market Safety After Accident." County set to freeze council tax despite cuts to grants. And the third is PCC aiming to save 200 police jobs. And Ellen, will you please lead the story with the first headline, please?
Review of market safety after accident. Boy airlifted to hospital after bus collision by Joseph Curtis. Part of Winchester's High Street Market has been suspended this week after a bus collided with a child next to the stalls. The move comes as calls were made to review pedestrian safety after a 10-year-old boy was airlifted to hospital last Friday after the collision in the Lower High Street. His injuries were said to be serious, but were not believed to be life-threatening. Councillors, Winchester's MP and bus company Stagecoach have all raised concerns over the market's safety in the wake of the accident. A City Council spokesman said on Tuesday, Winchester City Council was sorry to hear of the incident in the High Street last Friday, and our thoughts remain with those involved. We are meeting the police today, Thursday, to hear their preliminary views on the circumstances surrounding the accident. In the meantime, we have decided to suspend the market today and tomorrow, Friday, in the lower part of the High Street until we are clear about the circumstances of the accident. This will affect about 8 or 10 stalls. The spokesman added, after meeting the police, we will decide on the best approach for the market on Saturday and Sunday, February the 2nd and 3rd. We are taking this very seriously and looking again at all the safety aspects. If there are longer-term issues that fall within the work or responsibilities of the City Council, we will look at them carefully and quickly and take any actions that may be necessary. The accident happened when the Stagecoach No. 3 bus was moving at low speed next to the market stalls at around 2 p.m. Paramedics treated the boy at the scene and he was airlifted to Southampton General Hospital at around 3 p.m. The air ambulance helicopter landed in the Cathedral Close. It's believed to be the first time this has happened. Ward Councillor Ian Tate said buses should not drive down the High Street with or without the market. He said, I don't support the buses going through that part of the High Street. It's a 30-mile-an-hour zone, which is absurd. If people want traffic to go through the High Street, it should be all traffic or none at all, because just having buses makes no sense. MP Steve Brine, who passed the scene shortly after the crash, said, I've been concerned for years about the safety of buses coming right into the pedestrian area, and I think the introduction of the market on this particular stretch has made it more dangerous. Stagecoach South Managing Director Andrew Dyer said, I agree with Mr. Brine. The market stalls are incredibly close to moving vehicles. The bus driver would not have had a chance to see the child, and the child would not have had a chance to see the bus. Police Inspector Andy Tester said, a crash happened between a 10-year-old boy from the Winchester area and a bus. The child was taken by air ambulance to the trauma unit at Southampton General Hospital, and his mother went with him. An investigation is ongoing, but no arrests have been made. Witnesses said a group of boys were running in the street just before the accident. Mark James, aged 20, a market trader, said, these boys were running after each other down by my stall and one just ran into the road.
County set to freeze council tax despite cuts to grants. But City Council awaits government figures before deciding. Hampshire Council chiefs are planning to freeze council tax for the fourth year running. The Conservative-run County Council said the government is to reduce the grant it received by 8.7% and 9.6% over the next 2 years. But bosses have already made savings of £100 million over the last 2 years by axing 1,200 jobs and services, equal to 8% of the budget, in 2011 and 2012. Now departments, including children's services, adult social care, transport, libraries and county parks, are being asked to find further savings of 2% in 2013 and 2014. In total, the local authority aims to shave 20% off its budget over the next 4 years. Council leader Ken Thornber said the local authority received one of the lowest grants per head of population of any county. He said, "These savings, plus the money we set aside to cushion Hampshire residents from the impact of huge grant losses we knew were coming, stand us in good stead to tackle the tough times ahead." The local authority will receive a government grant of £5.3 million for freezing council tax. This is equal to a 1% rise in council tax. Councillor Thornber pledged more cash for child protection and home care for the elderly to cope with increased demand for services and to improve broadband in rural areas. Some £1.9 million has also been earmarked to help troubled families turn their lives around. The council has previously come under fire for hoarding more than £200 million of taxpayers' money in reserves, which the Liberal Democrat opposition councillors and unions say should be spent on services. Last year's cuts saw the merging of children's centres, axing of youth support staff, slashing of day centres for adults with learning disabilities, and the closure of 3 care homes for the elderly, including Cornerways in Kingsworthy. The book fund was reduced, and Winchester's Stanmore Library moved to the Carroll Centre, where it is now run by the charity. This year, the council plans to save millions by merging corporate services in a new department, including human resources, IT, and county treasurers. There will be some job losses across the council, but on a much smaller scale, and it plans to freeze vacant posts, reducing the need for further redundancies. Winchester City Council won't reveal the full scope of next year's budget until next month. At a cabinet meeting, leader Keith Wood said a firm budget could not be revealed because of delays in information on government grants. But Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for finance, said he was optimistic Winchester would not lose out on funding. He said, "What we have learned over the last few weeks is, I am pleased to report, that our settlement for this year and indications for future years are not as bad as they could have been. Overall, our report presents a stable picture, which means it should not be necessary to make any significant changes to our budget." The full budget will be announced in February, including money for projects, grants to other groups, and the council tax rate. It will then go to full council for approval later that month.
PCC aiming to save 200 police jobs. Proposals revealed to the panel. 200 police jobs could be saved to ensure the Hampshire force provides a better service to the public, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. That is one of a number of proposals put forward by the country's new Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC Simon Hayes, in his 4-year vision for the force. But he revealed plans in a draft budget put before the new Police and Crime panel, which also voted to set a rise in the police element of council tax this year when it held its inaugural meeting. From April, residents will have to pay an extra 3.4% towards policing in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, the equivalent of an extra £5 a year or 10p a week for those living in a Band D property. PCC Simon Hayes said it was needed to invest in the force currently faced with saving £55 million over 4 years, so that the county has enough manpower to ensure it stays a safe place in which to live and work. So far, around £40 million of savings have been identified and more than 1,000 posts have been lost. The plan to save jobs would not be ratified until March, but if approved, will mean the 999 call centre will be bolstered, although it won't necessarily mean more officers on the streets. Mr. Hayes told the panel, "We would like to enable the constabulary to respond more speedily to calls, and that means a call centre that has greater capability than it has now." Asked why he wanted to raise the council tax precept at a time when people were facing their own financial constraints, Mr. Hayes said, "The force had been placed under considerable strain by the cuts." He added, "We don't believe the resilience of the police service as it is can continue for very much longer." John Apter, chairman of the county's police federation, said, "During the past couple of years, we have seen police officer numbers slashed due to the budget cuts. This announcement gives me hope that more police officers will be available to support what is a very thin blue line. A well-resourced control room is essential to deliver great policing, and I am pleased that the PCC recognises this."
Thank you. And those are the headline stories for this week. We're moving on now to read the death notices for this week, and they will be followed by Matt reading Christian comment. Then we'll have letter to the editor. We have 12 this week. Historical items, your say, chronicle comment, and first person. But now back to the death notice, which will start off with Ellen, please.
Beanland. Peter Hoare Beanland, on the 23rd of January, aged 90.
Brown. Michael Cecil Brown, late of Lower Upham. At home, 24th of January, aged 75.
Crockford. Hilda Crockford. Peacefully, 21st of January, aged 93.
Irwin. Brenda Irwin. 27th of January.
Mariner. Raymond Edward Mariner, in Canada, his home for 55 years. Originally from Exton in Hampshire. Aged 80.
Nutbeam. Betty Nutbeam. Peacefully at home, 26th of January.
And we'll have Matt now, please, reading the Christian comment.
And this week's Christian comment is by the Canon Rowley Ream. Reform the rules with respect. When Prince Harry talked recently of taking insurgents out of the game, he was speaking as a soldier. It is perhaps inevitable that the language of PlayStation has crept into everyday speech. Though it may seem to trivialise the horrors of combat, at least it suggests that there are rules that define the difference between killing and murder. Another game, generally more peaceable, is football. The news last week was dominated by an off-pitch incident in which a player kicked a ball boy in the ribs in an effort to retrieve the ball on which the ball boy had chosen to lie. Whatever the excuse, it was violent conduct, which the rules of football do not permit in any circumstance. A serious game in the news is Europe. Commentators are divided over what sort of game is being played. Is the Prime Minister or the leader of the Conservatives speaking when Mr. Cameron says we will have an in-out referendum? Is it to satisfy the right-wingers of his own party, or to allow the nation to determine its own future? To see this debate as a game can be helpful. Europe is run by rules, however complex they are to negotiate. They can, with the consent of all parties, be changed, and it is within the rights of any player to suggest a variation, or even radical reformation. Seeing the debate like this offers two further insights. First, only rules which enable everyone to play more fully and fairly have a chance of being accepted. Pushing to secure an advantage is unlikely to gain acceptance among all other players. We must look instead for common benefit in the changes to how Europe works. The second insight is that the best way of changing the rules is to adopt a very open and respectful spirit to all other players. Politics sometimes demands rhetoric, rather like when prize fighters square up to each other, whereas the real work is going to take place when leaders listen carefully to each other, prepared for give and take. Even Germany, so committed to the European ideal, might be persuaded to listen to its own critics. Christians, like everyone else, have different views about where it is right for us to belong. What we cannot avoid, however, is a commitment to fair play, and not only for ourselves, whether by reforming the rules or in another game altogether.
And now we move on to letters to the editors, which, as I said, we have 12 this week, and we're going to begin once again with Ellen, please.
Chris and Linda Jones write, "This travel plan is deeply flawed." Sir, Re-Councillor Roy Perry's response to concerns over travel plans for the Westgate through school. Since the submission of the original plans and proposal for building a new primary and nursery on the Westgate School site, the nursery has been relocated from the safe environment of Green Lane to a site next to the most congested part of Cheriton Road. No public consultation was carried out, and there is no provision for parents to safely drop off and pick up their very young children from Cheriton Road, as the travel assessment was carried out in October 2012 before relocation. The deeply flawed travel plan has to be resolved in a way that protects the 1,800 children who will be travelling to and from this already highly congested area of Fulflood and Cheriton Road in particular. Councillor Perry's assumption that many children from far-flung catchment areas will be able to walk to and from school is wrong, considering their age and the hazards presented by crossing several main roads and narrow bridges and underpasses. Surely the sensible solution to providing extra primary school places in Winchester would be to extend each existing school and await the building of a required primary school at Barton Farm. Chris and Linda Jones, Cheriton Road, Fulflood, Winchester.
Inconsistencies in school assessment. Sir, in his reply to concerns raised by residents, Councillor Roy Perry, HCC Executive Member for Children's Services, said the Westgate School scheme had been well thought out, Chronicle, January 24th. The comment that many children will be able to walk to school is based on figures from adjacent local schools as part of the transport assessment submitted for planning purposes, where 84.1% of children do, in fact, walk to school. The extrapolation of this to the new school does not take into account the much wider catchment area, with some children living up to 2 miles away, a round trip of 4 miles twice a day for parents. The draft travel plan for Westgate School mentions both the walking bus and bikeability schemes. Locally, the walking bus has had a poor take-up, and recent efforts to re-establish it at Western School has generated little interest. Bikeability is government-funded, but only for children aged 10 and above, a very small percentage of the new school's 420 pupils. The transport assessment states, supplementary planning guidance does state that a coach or bus loading area should be provided for primary age education or above. The comment that this is now being looked into is not in accordance with the transport assessment undertaken for this application. Whilst it may well have been thought out, there are inconsistencies between the documents submitted to support this application and subsequent comments. And that was a letter from Tim Stannard of Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Councillor Rory Perry says the scheme for Westgate Primary School has been well thought through. Most of the children will be able to walk to school. Chronicle, January the 24th. He should read the traffic assessment again, and then the Greening full flood analysis of it, attached to the travel plan. The assessment assumes that the same proportion of children will be driven to the school as they are to four single catchment area primary schools in Winchester, a school run of 58 cars. This is a fundamental error. The school will serve not one catchment area, but at least two, and perhaps up to four. He is wrong to think most pupils will walk from the St. Bede catchment area, some parts of which, like Abbots Barton or Kingsgate Street, are 3 or 4 kilometres away. Only eco-warriors will persist in walking to the school from areas outside the current catchment area. At best, if the school serves two catchment areas, Weston and St. Bede, most of the 200 pupils, or 175, from the St. Bede catchment will be driven to the school. Worse, if it serves four catchment areas, most of the 300 from outside the local area, 250, will be driven to the school. It is likely Cheriton Road will end up hosting an additional 250 cars every afternoon in cold weather or with the engines running. I'm not surprised the residents are worried. The least Councillor Perry can do is authorise substantial infrastructure improvements to make walking or cycling an attractive proposition. This is urgent and of high priority. From Phil Gagg, Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Liz Darlinson asks, has Education Boss got his sums right? Sir, I was shocked to read Councillor Roy Perry's comments in the Chronicle, January the 24th, concerning the new 420-place primary provision at the Westgate School. I wonder if he has understood the transport statement accompanying the planning application. It predicts 58 extra car journeys for a primary school with a catchment area stretching from beyond Chilbolton Avenue in the west to Abbots Barton in the north and Wharf Hill in the south-east. This number is calculated by assuming the same percentage of children will walk to school as do in much smaller catchments. Is this realistic? Elsewhere it is suggested the figure of 58 can be reduced to 20, as lots of parents would be passing anyway. Can we really be expected to believe an increase of 420 pupils will result in just an extra 20 cars on the network? If we are to be convinced there is a sustainable travel plan, we must be sure it is based on a sound foundation. Liz Darlison, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And the next letter is from Martin Brown of Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester. Time to consider sensible options. Sir, read the plans for the through school in Cheriton Road, Winchester. I am opposed to this move from the council. I realise that they face genuine difficulties creating places for school children, but they are aiming at what appears the easiest target. Cheriton Road is a thin, leafy, overburdened residential road. They have no effective travel and transport plans, have sidelined the residents' concerns to date, and, worst of all, appear unconcerned about safety risks this will create. I fear this is one of those issues where a loss of a young life will result, and the council will accept no blame. There is already strong opposition as more residents learn of this ill-thought-through proposal. The council need to reconsider other, far more sensible options.
This accident was waiting to happen. Sir, regarding the very serious accident last Friday, January 25th, involving a child and a bus in the Lower High Street area, this was an accident waiting to happen. The area above Marks and Spencer is obviously a pedestrian shopping precinct, although the fruit and vegetable stall could be moved away from the corner where the buses turn on leaving High Street. Crowds of people are displaced by it, often into the path of oncoming buses. The accident happened lower down the street, opposite the Debenhams and C&H stores. Here the stalls are very close to the shops, leaving a narrow strip of pavement which becomes so congested that people move out through the market stalls into the main road and into the path of oncoming buses. This happened last Friday when a child went through the stalls into the path of a bus and was seriously injured. This area is not a pedestrian precinct. Local residents know this, but visitors may not be aware, especially when there are no buses in the immediate area. There is no necessity for these stalls at all. Most of them would be better placed in car park, car boot sale, or general market area. We do not need or want these luxury stalls, as there are plenty of good shops vying for business in the city, or closing down because of the competition from the stalls outside their own windows. If you need to set up stalls to amuse the tourists and other visitors, it will be better to place them elsewhere. It will then be safer to walk up the street on the pavement, looking out for the buses, safer for townspeople and all visitors. From Catherine McManus, Spitfire End, Winhall, Winchester.
Katie Gallien writes, "Milkmen deliver in the worst of weather. My husband, Andrew, is a milkman, delivering across Alsford, Cheriton, Kilmerston, Preshaw and surrounding areas. Last week, in the middle of the biggest snowfall this year, he made sure every customer received their milk, even though this meant he had to park and walk with his crate up tracks and lanes to houses and farms cut off from the main road. Sometimes milkmen don't get enough praise. It's not a big deal to some, but he has a lot of elderly people on his round who rely on him for their daily pint, and he doesn't like to let any of them down." Katie Gallien, Woodlands, Bramdean.
And the next letter is titled, "Chronicle covers an ocean of opinions." Sir, Pip Billington asks, "Anybody else's alarm bells ringing?" Letters, January the 24th. "Mine are. He is not alone. On reading, congestion charge would cut traffic," remark, "I rarely visit an already costly Winchester. The report on hospital mergers, with senior managements gifting themselves a massive reward, is par for the course and wrongful. In Your Say, three people say Prince Harry was right to speak about killing Taliban. One says not. I agree with that and am alarmed. A Vulcan reminds of a successful past. Tim Bittleston opines that Europe is a huge delusion, which, alarmingly, is right. Mike Rowe on Silver Hill warns that our money and a great city is at stake. That is my fear too. T. Martin highlights muddled housing planning. Howard Ward cites alarming inbuilt bureaucratic rising costs of power. Snow White and a milkman bring in a shaft of light before wind generators cast a cloud. Finally, R. Harrison asks what we get for our council tax. Oh yes, alarm bells are ringing. But who is paying attention? Not those with their noses in the trough, whose ears and eyes are focused on self-interest and not on providing value for taxpayers' money. Our new police commissioner seems unwilling or unable to serve, despite the Chronicle's report on January the 10th, headed, "New Police Chief Wants Your Views." He has made clear he does not mean it. He has his own. And that letter was from Freddie Crabb of Hensting Lane, Oslebury.
Next letter is headed, "Might Winchester Yet Become a Pedestrian and Cycle-Friendly City?" Sir, your report on Winchester's green campaigners and traffic pollution partially revived my hope that it might become a pedestrian and cycle-friendly city. For 35 years, I have lobbied council officers and councillors to reduce traffic and pedestrian conflict and pollution. Initially, personal, since the 1980s, it has been with the support of Winchester City Residents Association. I recall three successes: Pelican Crossings at the hospital, Stockbridge Road, and at the Brooks, but little else except improvements to Jury Street and top of the High Street. In 1975, I started pressing for a pedestrian crossing at Chilbolton Avenue and Stockbridge Road Junction, and now hope to see a zebra crossing installed shortly, as well as a satisfactory crossing adjacent to Waitrose in Stony Lane. In 2002, I organised a survey to establish how many unauthorised vehicles passed between Marks and Spencer and Sainsbury and Marks and Spencer and the Brooks. Results showed over 300 per 8-hour day, thereby reducing safety, increasing pollution, delaying buses, and damaging the shopping and pedestrian environment. A unique opportunity to exclude traffic from the square was lost when it was repaved. Real progress could be made if the local authorities were to reduce city traffic and pollution, prevent unauthorised vehicle use mentioned above and in Station Hill, alter crossing phasings to give greater priority to pedestrians, undertake Jury Street Phase 3 improvements, install pedestrian crossing near Romsey Road Railway Bridge, prevent the Square, Staple Gardens and Trafalgar Street being used as rat runs, improve pedestrian facilities on radial routes, impose city centre 20-mile-per-hour limit and in appropriate suburban areas. This letter from Maurice K. Charrett, Hampton Lane, Tegdown, Winchester.
Judith Martin writes, Calla advertisement makes one wonder. Sir, it was good to see Calla's quarter-page advert in the Chronicle for their information event today, January the 31st, midday to 7:30 p.m. at the Guildhall. One does wonder, though, who is being informed, the populace of Calla's intentions or Calla of the strength of local feeling, especially about the rerouted Andover Road? Robert Wellbeloved, writing a fortnight ago, said several hundred more people would have signed the mass letter had they been invited. Let's hope they all get to the event and make their opinions known. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Time to reappraise Silver Hill scheme, writes Catherine Ferrier of Stratton Road, Winchester. Sir, it must be time for the disastrous proposal of the Silver Hill development to be re-examined. Why do coachloads of tourists come to Winchester? Not to see an empty postmodern shopping mall or indifferent housing developments. These current plans will destroy the skyline of our unique historic city. I wonder how many residents saw the projected horror of the model displayed in the now empty council office, Avalon House. Yes, we need housing and an imaginative solution for the disembarking of public transport. But the one thing we don't need is more shops. This ill-conceived and surely outdated solution must, in this current climate, be reappraised.
This letter from Margot O. Walker, Little Ashton Dairy, Bishop's Waltham. Road wreckers must pay for the damage. Sir, Mike Manley, letters January 17th, is so right when he says those responsible should be made to pay for damage to our lanes. We're all sick of damage done to our vehicles by potholes, so often caused by heavy lorries delivering to addresses around Bishop's Waltham. In particular, Ashton Lane has been vandalised by intercontinental articulated lorries delivering to private addresses. Signs clearly say the road is not suitable for HGVs, but the German drivers claimed, firstly, they did not understand, and secondly, that those signs did not apply to them. The company should be charged for the damage, and it is open for them to pass the charge on to the customer. Mr. Manley suggests the road repairs were not well done in the first place. Well, yes and no. They are probably all right for normal vehicles, but not for juggernauts. The council is under immense spending pressure, and it is a scandal that these companies from outside the country wreck our pleasant lanes. They, or those who order such material, should pay up.
Thank you, and those are our letters to the editor for this week. If you would like to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can ring 01962 860836. That number again, 01962 860836. You can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we're going to move on to historical items, and I'm kicking off this week with 200 years ago, 1813. An old lady of the name of Brent died a few days ago of the bite of a favourite dog. The animal, at the time, showed no signs of madness, and a fortnight had elapsed before the dreadful disease was discovered. The son of the deceased and seven other persons have also been bit by the same animal. But the wounded parts having been immediately cut away, hopes of recovery are entertained. And the next item for 200 years ago. The long-depending question as to the woods in the parish of Botley being exempt from tithes was determined on Tuesday last when the barons of the Exchequer ruled that tithes were not payable and dismissed the rector's bill. It will be recalled that an issue directed by the Court of the Exchequer was tried at our last assizes when an unusual number of old witnesses proved that, from time immemorial, no tithes had been paid for wood in Botley, but that the rector had enjoyed 2 acres of wood as a compensation for tithes.
100 years ago, 1913. The Winchester and Midhants branch of the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children has, during the quarter ended December the 31st, 1912, inquired into 34 complaints of neglect, ill-treatment and other wrongs of childhood, of which 33 were proved, affecting 90 children and 51 offenders. 27 cases were warned, in 2 there were prosecutions and convictions, and 5 were otherwise dealt with. And the second item, the old Guild Hall, as it has been called since completion of the new Gothic-fronted one in Broadway, has for a time, with the shops beneath, been void. This condition of this picturesque structure of the time of Queen Anne has attracted a substantial tenant, who has taken the lease and its unexpired 7 years. The Guild Hall, for long a showroom for attractive creations required by fashion, is owned by the city, the shops below by the Hospital of St. John the Baptist.
And these extracts are from 50 years ago, in 1963. The Ministry of Agriculture has launched a campaign to persuade Hampshire's 15,000 poultry keepers that it is in their own interests to have their birds vaccinated against fowl pest before the compulsory slaughter of infected flocks ends on March the 31st. The policy will only work if as many birds as possible are vaccinated before the slaughter of infected flocks ceases, and if birds are revaccinated at appropriate intervals, says the ministry. And the second extract. Out of 20 objections formerly lodged to the Winchester town map, little more than a dozen will be heard when the public inquiry into proposals for alterations or additions to the map opens in the Guild Hall on Tuesday. A number of objections have been ruled invalid by the Ministry of Housing and Local Government, and negotiations have resulted in others being settled. Mr. A.H.M. Smith, HCC Deputy Clerk, will start the hearing by giving the Council's case as planning authority.
And finally, 2 items from 25 years ago, 1988. Hampshire County Council's stance on the M3 has caused public disquiet, the Joint Action Group has claimed. In its second attack on the council at the public inquiry, the group again accused it of failing to carry out its public duty. Chairman David Croker said, "The Department of Transport and the council seemed always to agree, so much so that it was difficult to see where the department's role ended and the council's role began." And the second item. Fears for Winchester Cathedral dominated the Brooks development debate this week. The spectre of a crumbling cathedral was raised by the Ratepayers and Residents Association, who called for a public inquiry. There are now just 6 days before the £50 million Ladbroke City and County Land Scheme goes before the city planners. The ratepayers say the sinking of a 30-foot, two-level car park could dramatically affect the foundations of listed high street buildings and the cathedral by reducing the water table.
Thank you. I always get a little jolt when I realise I can remember some of the things that are being written about. I wonder how far back you can go. Right, the next item is from Matt, please, and it's the Hampshire Chronicle's Vox Pop. It's Your Say.
And this week's Your Say, we asked, should buses be allowed to drive through Lower Winchester High Street? The first reply was from Doug Dobson, 57, a retired builder of Longfield Road, Winnall. And he said, "The buses are there as a public service in the middle of the city where people need to be picked up. I think they should move the market because it restricts the pavement and it's difficult to see past it." Simon Holliday, 35, a nurse of Kestrel Road in Eastleigh, said, "I can't see why the buses shouldn't use the high street. I used to live in Winchester and never thought it to be a problem. I can see that it's necessary to stop them coming down there sometimes, but it is part of their established route." Benjamin Hardy, 28, a cleaner of Battery Hill in Stanmore, said, "I would ask whether the bus could go along another route. But for what it's worth, when I see the buses driving through, they are always going very slowly, and I've never felt in any danger there." And finally, Helen Etherington, a retired company director of Swithin Street, St Cross, said, "It is a tricky one. I think it would be better to reroute the buses, because with Marks and Spencer and Sainsbury's there, so many people are around all the time. I just don't know if that would be possible."
And the editorial comment of the Hampshire Chronicle this week naturally makes some remarks on this issue of the unfortunate accident. "It's headed stalls and traffic are a dangerous mix. Only a few would dispute that the market in Winchester has been a success since its move to the High Street from Middlebrook Street. What was once dying on its feet has been re-energised with traders keen to get a pitch and shoppers willing to support them. It has given the city centre an attractive vibe, encouraging footfall to the benefit of all, even those retailers who complain that the stalls crowd out their window displays. But the accident last Friday, in which a boy collided with a bus, has brought home that you can have too much of a good thing, too many stalls. There is no doubt that placing several stalls in the lower section of the High Street is highly dangerous. They are very close to the line of traffic, leaving almost no margin for error for either drivers or pedestrians. If the stalls stay there, it is only a matter of time before there is another accident involving a pedestrian and a bus. Next time, the consequences may be worse. The City Council was right to suspend the market in that lower section today, and tomorrow, pending talks with the police. It should announce that they will not return there. Either space should be found further up the High Street, or the number of stalls must be reduced." And we're going to move on now to first person, which will be read for us by Albie this week, please.
First person, written by George Hayter and headed "Tough Talking to Top Tories." First track on the Beatles LP Revolver was a protest song about the 95% income tax then imposed on the Fab Four. When I first heard the song "Taxman," I was amused by the background chant, "Taxman, Mr. Wilson, Taxman, Mr. Heath." Age 14, I wondered if Britain's two main political leaders knew the Beatles were singing about them. Years later, when I was introduced to Ted Heath, I was able to ask. Sir Edward told me that he had been aware of the lyric, but the memory produced no nostalgic smile on his face. I was talking to the Tory grandee at a drinks party in Winchester Guildhall. Attempting to lighten the mood, I invited him to compare the cathedral city of Winchester with that of Salisbury, where he lived. His grumpy response was, "I don't care to make comparisons of that kind." Finding the going heavy, I made an excuse and moved away from Sir Edward, who remained alone in his chair, a barren island in a sea of conviviality. I also met Margaret Thatcher at a drinks reception before a Conservative Party fundraiser at Botley Grange Hotel in Hedge End. I was a Chronicle reporter, and Lady Thatcher flattered me by telling those around us that the local press played a vital role. Later I heard from someone on the top table that she had been less complimentary about the party's then leader, Ian Duncan Smith. While Norman Tebbit made a speech urging the party faithful to rally around IDS, Lady Thatcher told neighbouring diners, "Ian's useless." The Prime Minister with whom I got on best was John Major. I interviewed him 3 times in one day during the 1997 general election campaign. In my company, Mr. Major could, amazingly, appear amusing. He got a laugh from onlookers by pillorying one of my dafter questions. My thoughts turned to Tory leaders because the 1,000th day since David Cameron became Prime Minister is clocked up next week. I met Mr. Cameron in 2005 when his likeable party colleague, Conor Burns, was struggling to win Eastleigh back from the Lib Dems. A publicity event had been arranged for Mr. Burns at the Hampshire Police 999 call centre at Netley. Also there was current Winchester Member of Parliament Steve Bryan, who was then a Tory PR man. Cameron had been sent from London to represent the Conservative front bench, but there was a mix-up, and at first the police wouldn't admit the Tory delegation. While Burns and Bryan tried to persuade them to change their minds, I was left in a room with Mr. Cameron. It was a prize interview, but I'd never heard of David Cameron, and I certainly didn't know what he was to become. After asking each other who we were, I'm afraid we lapsed into silence.
Belgarum is a diary that the Hampshire Chronicle published called An Alternative Look at the News. And the subject in this week's item is Last Men Standing. Pubgoers in Winchester who like to knock things over while they drink are finding their options shrinking. Having entertained people for centuries, the game of Skittles appears to be dying out, with just 2 pubs left in the district offering it. Once home to a traditional Skittle set, the Green Man in Southcote Street has given the space over to a function room. The Cart and Horses in Kingsworthy also had a Skittle alley, but that too was removed to make space for functions. But it can still be played at the Phoenix in Twyford and the Milbury's in Bowath. Landlord at the Phoenix, Paul Mundy, told Belgarum, "The customers love it. We find it's a nice thing for families because everyone is involved and can play. They seem to be disappearing. I think people are changing pubs for other things. They turn the rooms into restaurants and into bistros."
This is the Westminster Diary by Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. Every now and then I set aside a couple of hours to undertake some canvassing among the retail businesses in my constituency. Last Friday lunchtime, I was in Winchester city centre finding out how our retailers feel as we head into 2013, their plans for the year and reflections on Christmas. Responses were mixed on the Christmas market, and to be fair, I think splits according to what each shop sells. While increased festive footfall worked a treat for some, it left others cold. But overall, the marketing of Winchester as the Christmas city was recognised and appreciated. In spite of disappointing growth figures that very day, albeit on a national scale, I got a general message of optimism from Winchester retailers who seem focused on the accepted challenges 2013 will bring, but absolutely up for the fight. The high street market continues to be controversial. My views are well known, but I've had plenty of correspondence from constituents on either side of the debate. There is no doubt market days in Winchester feel bustling and vibrant, and there are some products on sale which add neatly to what's on offer. The fact remains, though, existing retailers who pay high rates for the privilege of a high street-facing store in a city like Winchester feel aggrieved on 4 days each week when a large green canopy pitches up outside their front window. To be honest, I share their concerns and represent them to the BID, both privately and at public events, such as the business breakfast I will address in Winchester on February the 8th. The other dimension to our high street market is safety. To be clear, only at one point in Lower High Street, and that came into sharp focus while I was in town last Friday, following the dreadful accident involving the young boy who was hit by a bus outside Debenhams. Like many of you, I am sure, I don't like buses coming right into the pedestrian area. And while I know this will stop when Silver Hill is complete, we are a long way from that point. I think economic revival this year will be the epitome of that curate's egg, in that it will be patchy, regional, and often bear little resemblance to what you hear about the national picture on the TV news. This year is also set to be a big year of change for my constituency, as a trio of issues affect our lives. The Barton Farm development pressing ahead. Silver Hill getting underway. Maybe. And increasing rent pressures for local shops and businesses owned by big, often London-based firms. All of these will affect Winchester city centre. But rent rises in particular are not unique to the city. We have, for instance, seen the long-standing Duke's Butchers in Chandler's Ford announce it is to close soon, which I know many locals will be sad to see. As ever, much more online about my local and Winchester-based work at stevebryan.com, or you can phone my office on 01962 791 110. And that number again, 01962 791 110.
Thank you very much, Matt. And our final featured item this week is In Brief, which Ellen will read, please.
Town's CAB closed after water dispute. The Citizens Advice Bureau in Bishop's Waltham has been forced to close after the owner of the adjacent property cut the water supply. It is owned by Bishop's Waltham City Councillor Colin Chamberlain and his wife. The office on Well House is leased to the CAB by the Parish Council. An old building with antiquated pipes, the Stopcock is located next door, within Councillor Chamberlain's property. Parish Chairman Judy Marsh said, "We thought it was not quite right that it was turned off. There is a written agreement. We asked them to turn the Stopcock back on, but they have not, because it's not good for them to have it on if they're not living there." Mrs. Marsh said the situation was now being considered by the parish's solicitors. Susan Lambert, chair of the trustee board of Winchester District CAB, said, "The CAB and its clients have unfortunately been caught in the middle of this situation, and until this is resolved, our Bishop's Waltham clients will have to contact our Winchester office." At the time of going to press, neither Councillor Chamberlain nor his wife were available for comment.
And those were the regular features chosen for you this week. And we move on to the items of the general news, with Matt reading the first one, please.
Protests mount over proposed 420-place secondary school. Safety and traffic are among the concerns. This is an article by Joseph Curtis. Protesters came out in force this week about plans to expand a city secondary school. Residents in Cheriton Road and Lynx Road, in full flood, gathered on Tuesday to vent their concerns over the County Council's plans to build a 420-place primary school and 55-place nursery at the Westgate School. The council wants to expand the school, also in Cheriton Road, to ease pressure on school places in the city, and will decide a planning application in March. But residents say they are worried about a variety of issues, including the environment, road safety, and the impact on the character of the area. Joe D'Andrio, 48, a company director of Lynx Road, said, "There's no pavement here, and we cannot have yellow lines because Lynx Road is unadopted. We have been affected for years by the parking at Weston Primary School, and this road gets completely full at picking up time. There's nowhere for these extra vehicles to go. This is not expanding the school as much as putting another school in where we already have the Westgate and Weston. The road is dangerous enough as it is, and we have tried to get something done before to calm the traffic, so to add to it is ridiculous." Tim Peschel, 58, of nearby Walnut Grove, added, "Rotherley Nursery brings in a huge amount of vehicles already, and I expect that will triple when this extension is built." Ward Councillor Robert Hutchinson said the extra school places should have been spread around the city rather than concentrated at the Westgate. He said, "I just think the County Council has been very complacent when thinking about all the traffic and congestion. With Weston, the Westgate, and the new school, we will have 2,000 staff and pupils together, effectively on one campus. The council has got to look at safety issues in Cheriton Road, and the existing transport statement in this application is inadequate." Councillor Roy Perry, the County Council's executive member for Children's Services, said the school would stagger start and end times for pupils in both schools to make it easier for parents to drop off and pick up, and that a sustainable travel plan had been drawn up. Councillor Perry added, "The school will keep the travel plan under review once the primary school is opened, so that it can be further developed if necessary. The car park planned will be gated and controlled for use only by staff, predominantly at the start and end of the school day, and for use by the badminton centre out of school hours. Other options were considered, but this one is the most suitable as it keeps pedestrian and vehicle access to this part of the site separate." And this article is accompanied by a picture of Jo D'Andrea front with 16 of her fellow campaigners who are worried about the impact of the new school, and they're all pictured at the foot of Lynx Road.
And now an article by Patrick Knox and Wesley Rock. £10 million raked in from parking charges. Councils make huge profits while cutting services. Hampshire councils raked in nearly £10 million in parking charges in just a year, with Winchester more than doubling its revenue over a 12-month period, according to a report. The report says town hall bosses are making huge profits from hard-pressed motorists at a time when they are cutting services and petrol prices remain sky high. However, the figures for Winchester's parking revenue were disputed by City Councillor leader, Councillor Keith Wood. Campaigners accused local authorities of using car owners as a cash cow, and warned that parking charges were discouraging drivers from shopping in the centre. In 2011 and 2012 alone, drivers provided £9.8 million for council coffers, an increase of 44% on the previous year, according to official figures gleaned from the Department for Communities and Local Government by the Institute of Advanced Motorists, the IAM. According to the report, Winchester City Council more than doubled its income to £2,798,000, suggesting it took in more revenue than larger authorities like Southampton, Portsmouth and Sheffield. The report put Winchester 42nd out of 353 local authorities for parking income. Elsewhere in Hampshire, Southampton City Council turned a £2.5 million loss in 2010-11 into a £1.3 million profit the following year. Meanwhile, Eastleigh Borough Council made a £1.25 million profit from parking in 2011-2012, a 27% increase. Matthew Sinclair, Chief Executive of the Taxpayers Alliance, said, "This massive rise in parking charges over the last year suggests that councils are using already hard-pressed motorists as a cash cow. The council's actions will seem all the more unfair to drivers when they discover that these local authorities have been reducing spending on highways. What's more, these hikes in parking charges are likely to have discouraged people from driving into town centres to go shopping, meaning that high street businesses suffer too." But Councillor Keith Wood said that the figures produced for Winchester were nonsense. He said the money for 2010-2011 included a £1.3 million adjustment for the change in car park property valuations, meaning that in 2011-2012, when there was no such adjustment, the income after costs appeared to shoot up. Councillor Wood said, "It's clearly nonsense. I hope the Institute will issue an apology and get their facts straight in future. We put up the parking charge by about 1% last year. It's a nice thought to think we're making that much money, but we've kept parking charges more or less static this year. I think what's happened is that there's been an accounting adjustment and the Institute haven't taken account of it." Council bosses also stress that the figures do not take into account expenditure on associated services such as park and ride schemes. However, Simon Bess, Chief Executive of IAM, said, "Councils are making record-breaking profits from parking, while cutting road safety spending on life-saving services such as education for young drivers, cycle training and safe routes to school schemes. At the same time, cuts to road maintenance will mean a backlog of repairs which will simply cost more to fix in the long term. Southampton City Council insisted parking revenue was vital because the city was facing its worst budget cuts ever. Eastleigh Borough Council leader, Councillor Keith House, said parking charges were a vital way of maintaining services and keeping council tax below inflation. Each council's total parking profit from fees, fines and permits was calculated after the amount spent on road maintenance and improvements.
Town grapples with where to build 500 new homes, and residents are asked for their views, by Andrew Napier. Alresford City Civic Chiefs are going back to square one as they struggle with plans for how the town can evolve over the next 20 years. A packed meeting heard how the town council was calling for the public to help it draw up ideas on how space can be found for 400 to 500 homes by 2031. But many of the 150-plus audience at Alresford Recreation Centre last Wednesday were sceptical about the exercise, as they fear the council is still wedded to controversial plans it proposed last year for houses on farmland off Sun Lane. Perrin's school and businesses from the Dean would relocate there. Those ideas were roundly slated at a public meeting last May. Janet Barker of Windermere Gardens said at last week's meeting, Why is the council still proposing plans rejected by the whole room last May? They cannot seem to see that they are making a mistake. It's amateurish. City Councillor Ernie Jeffs denied there was a fait accompli and conceded there should have been more consultation before any plans were drawn up. We made a mistake in the past, he said. We are starting again. The meeting chairman, Lisa Griffiths, a town councillor, said there would be a feedback meeting in March. You will get to be consulted. Nothing is set in stone and you are not being ignored, she said. Steve Opakic, senior city council planner, said Alresford needed to grow by 400 to 500 homes by 2031. Otherwise, the number of young people would decline and Alresford would become increasingly elderly and middle class. You need housing to maintain a balanced population that will help Alresford retain its role. Where will the people live who you need to run your nurseries and play schools? He asked. Mr. Opakic said the development boundaries had not changed since 1964, and without growth, he said, where is the next injection of young families coming from? Peter Pooley of the Alresford Society agreed. People have to recognise that if you don't increase the number of houses, the population will fall, because households are shrinking in size. More and more are occupied by one person. Many in the audience said they would like to see a neighbourhood plan produced because townspeople would have the chance to vote on it in a referendum. But town councillors said at the moment they preferred to work with the city council. A neighbourhood plan would cost £50,000. Draft plans will be produced by September, with a formal public consultation in late 2013, early 2014. The issue is dividing not just the town, but also the town council itself. Two councillors expressed their unhappiness after the recent town council meeting. Councillors Barbara Jeffs and Natalie Carpenter say there has not been enough discussion amongst councillors. And Councillor Roy Gentry, who is chairing a working party into the town plan, conceded that it had been lax in reporting back to the council. Other proposals have been put forward on the town council website, and one alternative is for housing to go on a field between New Farm Road and the River Itchen. One critic of the town council's stance has been Professor Brian Tippett of Derwent Gardens. He said, the town council has underestimated the strength of public feeling on this. The case for moving the school has not been made in its own right, but rather as a convenient way of freeing up land in the town centre for housing. Everyone I have spoken to does not want development on Pearson's Down off Sun Lane, but has always assumed housing would be built there. Relocating the school and industrial estate there raises a very big question about access. It needs to be looked at in a radical way. The best alternative is a new road coming in off Bishop Sutton Road. The town council is holding a series of workshops to look at important issues. Infrastructure met on January the 30th. Employment will meet on February the 27th, chaired by Jan Field of Alresford Society. Open Spaces on March the 6th, chaired by Town Councillor Roy Gentry, and Housing on March the 13th by Roger Laws. But the Town Council has also called a special meeting this Monday, February the 4th, at the Recreation Centre to discuss the plan. And this meeting is open to all.
CAB celebrates 25 years of work at prison. It was a pioneering move when the Citizens Advice Bureau began its work in Winchester Prison 25 years ago. Inmates have since then been able to benefit from confidential interviews and advice from CAB staff. The milestone was marked by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, at a reception at Abbey House, attended by prison officers and advisers from Winchester District CAB. Councillor Pearson said, This is essential work. A lot of these guys get into trouble because of a lack of guidance. Most of us have family around us to rally around and help. But a lot of men and women who find themselves in prison do not. Winchester CAB Chief Executive Jenny Meadows, who thanked the mayor for hosting the event, said, "To provide an unbroken service over such a long period of time is remarkable. We thank the prison governors over the years for allowing this to continue, and long may it do so." The Bureau tries to have a weekly rota of at least 4 volunteers to visit the site on Romsey Road.
Council awaits High Court Gypsy Site verdict. Winchester City Council is waiting for a High Court judgment on whether it can evict 6 gypsy families from a travelling showman's site near Mitchell-Dever. The council is challenging a planning appeal decision that allowed them to remain at Carousel Park. A hearing at the Royal Courts of Justice went ahead last Friday when both sides argued their case, but the judge deferred a decision. A City Council spokesman said the judge was not in a position to make a decision on the day and therefore will send written notification of his decision in due course. We don't know when that will be. The planning battle dates back to 2003, when the City Council granted planning permission for the site on condition it was only occupied by people working in travelling shows and fairgrounds. The idea was they would live on the Stratton Woodland site during the winter. The land was divided into plots for 9 families, all supposed to be members of the Travelling Showman's Guild. Planners issued an enforcement notice in 2010 for an alleged breach of this condition. But some residents claimed at the planning appeal last year they are both gypsies and showmen who have mixed over the generations. Carousel residents said they did other jobs such as landscaping, gardening and house painting to boost their income as fairs were no longer profitable. But the City Council said it did not want Carousel Park to become a designated gypsy site because it was needed for travelling show people. Planning Inspector Douglas Martin quashed the notice, ruling the condition it should only be occupied by show people was never officially incorporated into the permission. The City Council sought a judicial review of this decision.
I have an article headed Earl's Busy Day in Winchester about a visit by Prince Edward, and there are illustrations of a huge bronze relief of the Queen with her head set in the middle of the Hampshire Rose, and also of the Earl shaking hands with a white-haired, smiling woman who is the sculptor of this bronze relief. Prince Edward unveiled a portrait in Winchester dedicated to the remarkable reign of his mother, Queen Elizabeth. The huge bronze sculpture in the Great Hall was commissioned by Hampshire's Lord Lieutenant, Dame Mary Fagan, to mark the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. The Earl of Wessex said, "It is indeed a great honour to be standing here and doing this. All of you here represent what is best about Hampshire. And this is a memento not just of this extraordinary year, but of this extraordinary reign." Unveiled on Tuesday, the work is a bas-relief portrait of the Queen, set in bronze, with the Hampshire Rose forming a frame around her face. Measuring 6 feet in diameter and weighing 165 kilograms, it took Andover sculptor Vivian Mallock about 8 months to complete. Mrs. Mallock, who is currently working on a bust of Sir Winston Churchill for the Pentagon, said the work presented some unique challenges. "This was more difficult than my other work because of the size. It's absolutely vast. Also, the Queen had said she would not sit for anyone during her Jubilee year, so I worked from photographs from the Royal Mint. There were more than 100 people at the hall, welcomed by Hampshire County Council leader Ken Thorber. Councillor Thornburgh said, "This hall is rich in the history of our early monarchs. That history will today be enriched by the unveiling of the bronze sculpture of our truly remarkable Queen." Earlier in the day, the Earl had been at Winchester University to officially open a £6.5 million state-of-the-art learning building. He said, "The last time I came here, it was still a college, so it's great to come back to it as a university. Learning is obviously something that is thriving in Winchester." And the Prince then took time to sit in on a class and talk to media production students. And there's a photograph of staff and students all smiling as they chat to the Prince. Second-year student Naomi Pink, aged 19, spoke with Edward. "It was great," she said. "He obviously has some interest in film production because he understood the roles we each have and was clearly comfortable talking about film production." Around 70 people turned out to witness the Earl's arrival, including the Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend James Atwell, who said, "It gives everybody a sense of pride in what they're achieving, from the university leaders and the students to the builders who worked on the site."
And the next article by Joseph Curtis is titled "Rat Run Measures Not Working, Say Residents." But council says only police can enforce them. A row over a rat run through some of Winchester's oldest streets is continuing. Councillors debated traffic restrictions in Great Minster Street and the Square at a meeting of the Town Forum last week. The council is set to repave the road in a joint project with the County Council that will cost around £300,000. Vehicles are currently banned from entering the roads unless they are for business or residential access, including customers visiting the shops. But residents of Simmons Street and St Swithin Street have criticised the restrictions after a County Council traffic survey revealed that the majority of drivers were using it as a shortcut. Peter Grant, chairman of St Swithin Street and Simmons Street Residents Association, told the meeting residents were fed up with constant traffic. He said, "We have approximately 2 cars per minute coming down the road throughout the day. These restrictions have been a complete waste of money and don't mean a thing. I have a map as far back as 1417, and the street layout of this area is almost the same as today. It was not designed for motorised traffic and all that goes with it, particularly large vehicles which scrape their way along the road." But Andy Hickman, head of Access and Infrastructure, said the council was unable to enforce the restrictions. He said, "Some traffic orders we are able to enforce ourselves, like parking restrictions, but we cannot enforce moving traffic restrictions. That relies on the police, but they have little resources to do that. We are not condoning people going through there illegally, but we cannot do anything about it." Councillors proposed a number of solutions, including erecting traffic lights with long delays in the road and pedestrianising the area from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Mr Hickman added, "If we make Market Lane open to two-way traffic, then people will get slowed by lorries and that will make the rat run less attractive." But Councillor Robert Sanders, who represents St Michael's Ward, said the road was part of a bigger problem of transport between the west to east of the city and recommended leaving it as it is. Meanwhile, nearby businesses said they don't want the road restricted because it could harm their trade. Keith Scorgi, managing director at Design House, said, "There's very few cars that break the speed limit along here, and drivers are sensible, and we get people coming in because they drive past and look in our windows." James Marshall, system designer at Bang & Olufsen, added, Our position is we want cars coming past. It's handy for our customers because they can drive in, park up and pick things up. The street is quieter anyway since the restrictions came in, but sometimes it can be a ghost street and we don't want to see that.
Airport routes safe as Flybe cuts hundreds of jobs. Routes out of Southampton Airport are safe, despite hundreds of jobs being cut from regional airline Flybe. About a dozen posts are to go at the Hampshire's airport's largest operator as it battles to plug a £3 million black hole. Soaring passenger duty and fuel bills are being blamed for the worst losses in the company's history. However, bosses say no routes from the local airport would be cut, although they did not rule out reducing flight frequency as they struggle to make a profit. Management and aircraft engineering posts will go by the spring as part of a national culling of about 300 jobs. This will see support and production roles, such as human resources and IT, affected, while around a fifth of its management team is being cut. The airline, which employs 250 staff in Southampton, is also considering outsourcing further support functions, including ground handling and onboard catering. The group, which also flies from airports including Bristol, Cardiff, Doncaster, Edinburgh and East Midlands, is also putting its network of 13 United Kingdom bases under review, with decisions made in the summer.
Praise Tempered by Need to Bridge Achievement Gap by Rachel Masker. Three quarters of children in Hampshire are being taught at primary or secondary schools graded good or outstanding by Ofsted, with 75% of primary and 77% of secondary pupils given the top two grades by the Education Watchdog. Hampshire is among the best performing local authorities. But there remains a big gap in educational achievement between children from poorer families and children in care compared to their peers, despite the pupil premium extra funds for schools to spend on disadvantaged pupils. At the end of primary school, 59% of pupils entitled to free school meals and 39% of children in care achieved level 4 and above in English and maths, compared to 82% of all pupils. In Hampshire, fewer than 1 in 10 children in care achieved 5 GCSEs A star to C, including English and maths, compared to 58% of all pupils. And now the county has made improving results for all children while narrowing the attainment gap for the most vulnerable among its top priorities. So although Hampshire's Education Chief Councillor Roy Perry is pleased with the county's overall performance, officers are working with the schools to develop personal education plans, while extra training is provided for designated teachers, social workers and foster carers.
It's a big night for Amdram, writes Joseph Curtis. Two of Winchester's biggest theatrical groups were big winners at a regional theatre awards ceremony last Friday. The Chesil Theatre excelled in the Curtain Call Drama Awards, winning the big three of Best Actor, Best Actress and Best Director for its production of Deep Blue Sea, with Ian Fraser, Katie Watkins and Lisbeth Rake scooping the prizes respectively. Lisbeth, who has been a member of the Chesil for more than 40 years, said she was delighted with the award, but it was down to a team effort. She said, "The lead actors really did have some magic about them, and I had a superb cast. We spent a long time looking at the characters and went over them again and again to really find out about them, because if you work on a character, acting comes more naturally. The director gets the credit for juggling all the balls, but I could not do it on my own. It was a lovely play to do, and I was lucky to have a super team on and off the stage. Winchester Operatic Society's Alison Bradley had a night to remember after winning Best Performance in an Opera for her portrayal of Anna Glavari in The Merry Widow. It was also a good year for Eastleigh's Centre Stage Productions Youth Theatre, which won several awards for productions of Rent and Beauty and the Beast. Dubbed the Oscars of the South, the glitzy awards ceremony was held at Southampton's De Vere Grand Harbour Hotel. Star of Keeping Up Appearances and Last of the Summer Wine, actress Josephine Chewson was guest of honour at the event, which is run by sister paper The Southern Daily Echo. More than 400 performers, supporters and crew dressed in their finest for the glamorous occasion, which celebrates the very best in amateur theatre across the South. And this article is accompanied by some lovely photos of Josephine Chewson, of three of the local award winners, including the Best Actress, and of a group photo of all the performers celebrating their success.
Keep your calling cards. Why is it that when one idiot does something, other seemingly intelligent people follow suit? This was a question asked by Pauline Swindells of Hursley, who took a photograph at Farley Mount Country Park of 8 dog poo bags hanging on a fence. She told Belgarum, "I walk my 2 dogs there several times a week, but I was appalled at fellow owners who had left dog poo bags on the fence near the play area. These irresponsible dog owners give the rest of us a bad name. Just because there are no bins, there is no need to leave the bags there." Pauline suggests people stick and flick the dog excrement into the undergrowth out of the way. Out of the way of the children and the other people. Belgarum suggests taking it away and putting it in a bin somewhere else.
And I think we'll let that conclude our Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Can I give you another reminder that Lynn Parker is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording? Her number once again is 01962 862 826. And we say many thanks to our editors, Jean and Vernon Gardner and Irene Dowding. Thanks also to the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, we must say thank you to our temporary team for today. And from Ellen.
Goodbye.
Matt.
Goodbye.
Albie.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roz, goodbye until the next time. And all of us here wish you a pleasant week. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.